Well, late again. Just late again. That's the news. According to my wife? Hello. Hello. It is almost 1:15 in the afternoon, Eastern Standard Time. Tuesday, February 25th, 2025. And I am... So it's 2:25:25. Well, I should have waited until 2:25. It'll probably be posted at 2:25. Oh, goodness gracious. It is I, your host, who will soon be filling in for Dan Bongino. Still waiting for the call. I'm just whenever they get around to calling me, I'll be right here. They can call me. I'm ready to jump in. Put me in, coach. Okay, here we go. I see it. So I'm at the home studio again today. It's very, very possible. Very, very, very possible. I may be doing the show tomorrow from the worldwide headquarters. Now, I don't know how that's going to work out for sure. I have to go speak at a club tomorrow. You know how they have these clubs? This happens to be something called the Rotary Club, I guess. They want me to talk about my career. It's like career day for me. Just give a 20-minute talk on my career that I've been doing for like 40 years. And I don't know how that's going to have to condense it all down to 20 minutes. I have to tell my whole story. I have to go back to when I was born. Tell the whole thing up until the present day and everything that, you know, everything I've had for breakfast in the last 5 weeks. I don't think they want that. I don't think that much detail is really needed. It's a general overview thing, but I'm sure there's going to be a lot of questions. They're saying they want me to be done, wrap it all up, and have time for questions, and be done all by 8 o'clock in the morning. That's just once I get rolling talking, I can't stop talking. I don't know what I'm going to do. So it's going to be an interesting day. I'll probably talk till about noon. And I'm sure by that time everybody's going to leave, except for the unemployed individuals. So I don't know anything about the Rotary Club. I really don't. I've looked it up online, Wikipedia. It just looks like a service kind of club. Don't know much about it. But that a friend of mine from high school, he's big into it, and he has invited me to speak. And I'll speak. I can go in there and speak. I can talk, bore them to death. For 25 minutes or whatever I'm supposed to talk. So I'm trying to put together a PowerPoint for that. It's been a little bit tricky. I'm trying to do a little. I don't want to have anything too complicated, but I want to have something that can, you know, some pictures they can visualize and look at. See some things, airplane stuff and that kind of thing, and just different things about my life and career. And yeah, so there you go. It's tomorrow morning, so I'm sure I won't have the show before that because I have to be over there like at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I'll probably have the show after that. But what I might do is stop by. Rather than coming home and stirring up the dogs, I'll just do that on my way back. So now the reason I said that thing about my wife there at the beginning, apparently she's been listening to the show. So I have to, I'm not going to change anything about the way I say anything. I don't have to be careful about what I say. I just have to be careful about what I say. No, I just have to be careful how I say it, I think is more importantly. And of course, I make sure I give her credit where credit is due. That's important. There you go. So I have chai here in my cup. With my favorite, Almond Joy Creamer. And I also have my backup cup is really almost my primary cup today because it's just so good. It's the backup cup should not be that much better than your chai. I have homemade peach tea with fresh peaches that my wife chopped up, by the way, and froze for me. My wife did that. Have I mentioned that? My wife did all that. She chopped up fresh peaches. She bought the fresh peaches, brought them home, chopped them up, put them into little freezer bags. But this is my last bag. So we're down to the wire here on the peach tea. Hopefully the peaches start growing. Because by the next time I'm wanting peach tea, I'm hoping that they have some fresh peaches out there from somewhere. But there might be a month here where I don't get them because it's just a little bit too early. I have an interesting schedule next month. Most of my next month, I will be able to have a show pretty much every day through the week. I've got weird things going on. The first part of the month, I've got jury duty, which is going to be interesting. Second part of the month, last part of the month, I guess I got this 1 week out of the month that it's just, I only have 2 days off, and it's just going to be, not sure how that's going to work. It's going to be a little bit tough because I think my schedule, it's just a little bit tricky. It's a little bit difficult. It's going to be a little bit difficult, I think. So we're looking at that. I'll be keeping you abreast of all that information as time goes by. Who knows? Maybe the jury duty thing will last for 2 months. It might be one of those big cases that we have here in our our state occasionally. Well, yeah, I'm sure it's not going to be a big deal. They probably won't even need me. Nobody commits crime in this town anymore. It just doesn't happen. All right, so onward and upward. We have a few things I want to talk about today. In fact, I should have wrote some things down because I'm pretty. Oh, and I actually didn't write anything down, which is kind of bizarre. That's just what's going on here. What is that all about? Picture I sent there didn't go there. Came over here. Okay, well, whatever. I have maybe I never sent that. A couple of things I want to talk about. One is the issue with Gaza right now, what's going on in Gaza. And I want to discuss that a little bit because there are some things happening that I think are, oh, I don't know. There's a particular individual that I want to talk about, and because there's just so much, in my opinion, disinformation. We've talked about this before. There's misinformation, there's disinformation. Some of the disinformation that I believe is out there is, in my opinion, probably one of the bigger issues that I'm kind of concerned about. And one of the people that are involved in that is a guy by the name of Norman Finkelstein. I'll be talking about him a little bit more. Because if I ever got into a conversation with this guy, I would slice and dice him with questions that I know he can't answer, since he's an expert on Gaza, I think we'd have to have a little throwdown with that guy because there's people just take what he says at face value and they never dig any more for questions. And it's interesting because the shows he goes on, now he's a professor of some kind at some kind of university. Of course, he's talking to kids who have no idea, no clue. They're all, of course, most people who take his class are probably, it sounds like they're more interested in social justice and all kinds of other things. And it's, they of course, that's what universities have become now. So social justice warrior camps. And I've been picking on that kind of thing this week with all the social media stuff that's been posted. It's the crazy, wacky people that are out there. Now, we have a fellow by the name of Dan Crenshaw. I want to talk about this first. Republican. He's a former Navy SEAL, which they seem to think that they can get away with anything. Now, I have all the respect in the world for Navy SEALs. I understand they go through a lot. They have a very tough job, to say the least. That's you can't even put into words a description to describe what those guys go through. However, having said that, there are some individuals who just never get over themselves, regardless of what kind of. Most of the Navy SEALs I've met, and I've met some personally, back when I was a kid, I had the opportunity to meet some Navy SEALs. This is back before anybody even knew really much about them at all. And they were the they were kind of the elite of the Navy at that time. I think Delta Force existed, but nobody knew. That was a top secret thing. Nobody even knew that existed at the time. This is back in the 80s, early 80s, probably 81, I believe was the year that I was spent some time on Coronado Island. Anyway, that's where they train. I have, they were very humble, very respectful individuals that I saw. That I met, the ones that I talked to. And I'm sure that when they cut loose, they really cut loose. However, I had no issues with their demeanor when I talked to them, and I was probably 18 years old at that time. I graduated when I was 17, so I was off in trade school at the time, going through some things. Anyway, whole different life back then. It was a whole different lifetime. I've been through several. So this Dan Crenshaw guy, apparently, and I'd like to pull up the audio. I'm going to see if I can find this real quick while I'm talking, because it's worth pulling up. I think Crenshaw, he's supposedly a Republican. Now, I'll have some things to say about this guy. And in fact, I've got it right here. This was in my history, so was it very easy to pull this up? I just listened to this morning. Here he is. This is Tucker Carlson. This is via Sky News. I was listening to Sky News this morning. Lefty's losing it with, what's her name? Panini, whatever her name is. Does an awesome job with this. But this is Dan Crenshaw. And he's in this interview. Now this part of it's pretty innocuous. You can tell he doesn't like Tucker Carlson, which is just fine. I don't expect him to, because he's a rhino. This guy's a rhino. He's kind of the star when he first came on. He could have been a presidential candidate. Not anymore. He's off, way off in a lot of ways and a lot of things. We can talk about that a little bit. But here he is. He's talking about Tucker Carlson. This guy brings up Tucker Carlson in his little interview here and asks him a question about it. See if I can coordinate this and make it work.
Here we go. What was said during that interview?
Just coming back to this $100 billion to Ukraine, I know that people like Tucker Carlson would make the argument that there's a real opportunity cost there. You know, we could have spent that money on the border.
He rolls his eyes as soon
as he's in America. Yeah. What do you make of that argument that all this money could have been spent to help Americans, and not Ukrainians?
You can walk and chew bubblegum at the same time. We spend 75-80% of our budget on a welfare state in America, on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. I would love to ask Tucker what he thinks that $100 billion should be spent on, and if he would vote for it as a conservative. Tucker doesn't know what he's talking about.
Okay, I want to leave it at that right there. Now, first of all, to bring up that we spend 75% of our budget on all the entitlements, which is a problem. He acts like $100 billion is nothing. This is what bothers me, is he just blows this off as if, well, we have $100 billion for Ukraine, so what? No, the point is that's $2 billion per state in this country. Let's break the math down here a little bit. $2 billion per state that we're paying to another country. And our border is being overrun. Of course, now it's not now. I think the first estimate that Congress could have passed to build the entire wall on the southern border would have cost, I think it was $8 billion was the high estimate on the thing. Now, of course, it always ends up being twice that and takes twice as long. Always does. Now, the wall that they were putting up at the time was going up pretty fast. It was actually ahead of schedule, believe it or not. It was pretty amazing. I'm not saying it would stay that way, because typically bureaucracy does not work that way. City and county and state governments usually come up with this idea that it's just like the high-speed train, the rail system out in California. They've spent, is it $20 billion now? And they don't even have any usable rail at this point. They need more money. It's still the funding keeps, this happens in Chicago is a perfect example of this all the time. They come up with an idea. Yeah, we got this $1 billion budget to do this thing with the train system or the airport system or whatever it is. And it ends up costing three times as much and taking three times as long. Always, always. I can show you the documents on this stuff, what they propose at the city board. Yeah, we're going to spend $1 billion, or usually it's just under $1 billion, $999 million. And it's going to take us three years to get it done. Of course, then they get to the end of their money, and they're already, 6 years into the project, and they need more because they have overruns. It's always that way. Of course, once they get invested in it, they know that once they get their toe in the water, there's no turning back. You can't just abandon the project because, we've already invested all this money. We got to finish it. So it's going to cost us, $3 billion and take us 9 years to do it, maybe 10. Of course, by that point, it's going to be outdated, run down. It's going to need repairs on the things we did 10 years ago. Because most things have a 10-year shelf life in the process of, in terms of major reconditioning, refinishing. So by the time you actually get to use the thing, it's already 10 years old. And costs three times as much as you expected. That's typically the way things go with that. Now, the other thing he does here is he, right after the microphone is off, as soon as he thinks the microphone is off. In fact, I think he took the mic off of his lapel mic off. There's a gaffing guy there that's still just taking the wire off and getting the whole thing undone. And what he doesn't know is there's still a microphone there. And as they're walking away, the microphone picks up what he says. Now, what he says, in my opinion, as a representative of the state, I think he's a California representative, or I'm sorry, a Texas representative. Now, we'll say some other things about this guy in a little bit, but it's just, he's worse than Nancy Pelosi, in my opinion, in terms of his, just, he makes a very disgusting comment, and I think it's, if I made this comment about him, they'd probably arrest me for doing it. He'll get away with it because, of course, he's a big shot, sitting up on the throne there on the Capitol Hill. That's what these people think that they are. They think that they're above us all. They sit on the seat of power, and they have the power over us. And that's not the way it's supposed to be here. They're supposed to be our servants. They're supposed to be at our feet. That's not been the attitude of most representatives lately. It's got to change. They work for us. But here we go. This is Dan Crenshaw after the formal interview. This is what he has to say.
Have you ever met Tucker?
We've talked a lot. So he says, we've talked a lot, on Twitter. If I ever meet him, I'll effing kill him. That's what he says. And then he says, I think he's the worst person ever, as he's walking away. Now, the guy who was interviewing him still has his microphone on. And he leans in as he's walking away so that he makes sure his microphone picks this up. I think that is probably one of the most abhorrent things that a representative can say about someone who basically is same party. Considers himself to be a conservative. Now, Tucker considers himself to be a conservative libertarian. Libertarian, not libertarian party libertarian, which is, of course, that's a whole other thing. I've tried to make that clear every time. I consider myself to be more of a conservative libertarian, and it's along the lines of what more of a Ron Paul libertarian. I got some differences with Ron as well. I think Ron gets it in terms of fiscal issues and trade and those kinds of things. But it's been. This is, in my opinion, I think this is worthy of being censured, in my opinion. Now, I hate to say that because you censure the guy and now you've got one less Republican in the House. I'm not sure if a censured representative can vote. I'm not sure if they can. I know they can't make any speeches anymore. I'm not sure what all censuring means, but I'm not sure if they can vote on certain things. They can't be on any committees, I'm pretty sure. So I don't know. This guy, now the other thing about this guy, the reason I equate him to Nancy Pelosi, when it comes to insider trading, this guy has made more money on the stock market than Nancy Pelosi has since he's been in office. I think his net worth now is like $300 million. Maybe it's $30 million. I think it's $300 million. Some ridiculous amount of money this guy's made. I think maybe it's $30 million. Since he went into office, I think he's made $30 million, if I'm right. That sounds right. On a salary of $170,000 a year. And of course, they just got themselves a raise, of course, because they can vote themselves a raise anytime they want. So I just, the guy is, how do I say, he's part of the slimy underbelly of Washington, D.C. And I'll say that to his face. I would be happy to. He's one of those individuals who thinks that he's above us all. He just has that attitude, and I appreciate the fact that I appreciate his service, I appreciate what he's done, and I appreciate all those things, and I respect all those things. However, at the same time, I don't see a reciprocal amount of respect towards the American people, the American public here, especially when it comes to someone who's very much a well-loved individual in our republic. So that's, and I think somebody who's pushing back against the war in Ukraine, he certainly has some valid issues, and I think he should be respected for that. Whereas, Tucker Carlson, as far as Dan Crenshaw, he just wants to continue to fight. Now, keep in mind, these people are these bureaucrats are the ones who have money coming back to them because they know that they're giving to the military-industrial complex. And being a Navy SEAL, I'm sure this guy is very well connected to the military-industrial complex. He knows the ins and outs of this whole thing. He's been around long enough now. He knows how to play the game. And of course, he sees that as a threat to his little empire he's building. I'll just leave it at that. We have one other individual I'm going to talk about, a fellow by the name of Norman Finkelstein. He is considered an expert. He's been interviewed by Jimmy Dore and some other people. And they sit there, and anytime there's an interview with this guy, they tend to sit there and kind of starry-eyed, just kind of listen to what their guy says. He comes out with all these different things that he says, and it's disturbing, to say the least, what he says. But there's a lot of questions. He comes out like there's 100% that Gaza's the victim. Gaza, you know, the people there, all the people are suffering, and this is a genocide. All this kind of stuff he comes out with. He's always saying all these things. This is the guy who says that half the population of Gaza, first of all, he says there's 2 million people living, is the most highly densely populated land mass in the world, which is not. If you look at the land mass and take the measurements, there are definitely there's other cities. I think Tokyo, Japan, is actually more densely populated. And it's just the same size. So we're talking about. And of course, it's considered to be an open air prison. That's what it is. 2 million people. Supposedly 2 million people. Now, there's estimates of anything from 1.2 million to 2.5 million. That's quite a quite a difference to not know how many people are there. Now, keep in mind, we have cities that have more people in them than that in the United States. Granted, they have high-rise, you know, buildings, that kind of thing, but that doesn't make up for all that. There's now, according to that, to him, half the population are children. Now, I don't know what he considers children. I don't know if that's people under 21 or people under 18. Keep in mind, there's no civilization on the planet. There's no country in the planet that has that kind of statistic. There's nobody. It's unsustainable for a population to be half children. When you think of the, you know, half the people, so the other half of the population, of that half, half of them have to be male and half of them have to be female. It's in order for typical statistical analysis here. It could vary by 5% about on either side typically, but it probably doesn't. One way or the other, there could be 45% male, 55% female, or it could go the other direction. Typically, a society will collapse at that point because of the issues that you start to run into, social issues start to run into. Won't get into all that. China experienced that. The old, you know, one-child policy became a nightmare because everybody wanted a male child because socially things turned into just a domestic mess. That was me sipping on my cup for some reason. I don't know what made that noise there. But the social imbalance can't happen. Now, if you look into the history, the real history here that goes back several hundred years, or really 1,000 years, if you go back a long ways here into this whole thing about where Gaza came from, where the individuals came from who lived there, the whole thing with the refugee population. Now, he says that 80% of the people who were there are either refugees or the descendants of refugees. Okay. That includes pretty much everybody in the world. I mean, we've all had families in our past probably that have refugee status. That kind of a statement really, now, if they were all refugees, period. That's one thing. If they're all refugees or descendants of refugees, pretty much everybody in Israel is. Almost all the Jews there were refugees at one point, or at least their families were. Now, these are the kind of statements that they make, and it makes it sound like they're the beaten, downtrodden individuals. Here's the other difficult part of this. My point of this whole thing is the UN had gotten involved when the British moved out because they were trying to colonize, you know, trying to make this thing, they were trying to, I don't want to say colonize it, but they were trying to maintain order in the Middle East there. They ended up giving up and saying, well, we got to get out of here and we're going to turn this over to the UN. Now, the UN has turned it into they made Israel get out of Gaza. Now you've got the Gaza and you've got the West Bank. It's two different, the Gaza is basically the east side and the West Bank is on the other side, of course. Hezbollah is on that side. The Gaza is Hamas, is the ruling faction there. Now, I hate to get into a really long history lesson here, but the Gaza is... They removed all of the Jews out of Gaza because there were settlements there. I remember this as a child. I remember them digging up the graves. I can remember seeing this on the nightly news. They were digging up the graves of the Israeli people and removing them, taking them out of that area. They didn't want to have anything to do with the Jews. They didn't want to have any settlements there. No colonies there. Individuals there. About 20 to 25, I think it's 20% of the population of Israel is Arab, by the way. They can vote. They have seats in their, I guess you'd call it their parliament. They have representatives in government there. You don't find that in Gaza. You will not find any Jews there. And by the way, you won't find any trans people there either. So, we have a situation here in Gaza where they were being told this information by this Norm Finkelstein guy. There's about $20 billion that we know of coming from, and keep in mind, the United Nations has used Gaza as a wedge. They've used these people as pawns for years against Israel to show the oppression of Israel. Look, they've got a wall built between them and Gaza. Have you seen the wall that Jordan put up on the Gaza border? It is 10 times higher and 10 times more fortified than anything Israel put up against Gaza. And nobody talks about that. They will not take any of them in. Now they're refusing to take any refugees in it as well. It has been used as a weapon, basically, against Israel in the social war. Because they have to have this oppressive class, this oppressed, they call it an occupation. It's not an occupation. Israel doesn't occupy Gaza. They're not allowed in there. And of course, in the meantime, they get $20 billion a year. Now break that down. And how much aid that is every year, how much you could pay every single person in the country. Every year that they get just in cash alone, they also get physical supplies. And I don't know how much that totals in terms of value. I'm sure it's in the billions of dollars as well. When it comes to relief aid, which is relief resources such as pipes for running water that they use to turn, they turn around and use those to make rockets out of. They get concrete for building things. Of course, they turn that into tunnels. The infrastructure materials that they've received, the resources that they've received, both cash and physical things that have been misappropriated and done other just do other things with them. The place, and by the way, when Gaza moved in there, or I should say when the Israeli people moved out. They left farms, factories, buildings, everything. But their hatred for Israel and for the Jews was so they were so enraged with hate. They burned it all down and razed it to the ground. They basically tore everything down that was there. They didn't want to have anything to do with any of that. They left them with all of that. Now, granted, I'm sure it wasn't anything spectacular, but the infrastructure was there. And they took it and burned it down, destroyed it. And now they claim that they live in an open-air prison. Now, I feel bad for the people who are there who have no other understanding or knowledge of anything else. They just most of them there are believing what they were told. Now, my understanding is they recently returned a young boy, and I think there were some people some hostages they had returned that they had claimed had been killed in an Israeli airstrike. That was not the case. They were not killed. The autopsy showed that they were strangled, basically strangled to death. Small boy and a couple other people returned their bodies. Of course, in exchange for those bodies, they got live people back. I think there was 100 people back from that Israel had captured in the war. This And yet you don't hear about any of that. All we continue to hear about are the protesters who are saying from the river to the sea. They don't know what river and they don't know what sea. They just keep saying from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. And what they mean is free of the Jews. And they're talking about the Mediterranean and the Jordan River. In other words, all of Israel, all of that land will be gone to the Jews. No Jews there at all. That's what they want. The elimination, the annihilation of all of them. That's genocide. Now, that's Gaza. I'm talking about that particular war. On the other hand, we have the Ukraine issue going on right now. And of course, Donald Trump is working out things with Putin. He's actually, you know, there. When you start looking at what happened here between Putin and Zelensky at the beginning of this whole thing, and everybody says, well, it was unprovoked. This was unprovoked. He's a dictator. Putin's a dictator, and it was unprovoked. But now Trump is calling Zelensky a dictator. And of course, these people that are waving the Ukrainian flag, and they think that Ukraine is just on the, you know, they can do no wrong. Zelensky can do no wrong. He's a hero. This is a guy who's closing Christian churches, putting Christians in jail in Ukraine because they're speaking out against the war. He also had on the table, this is according to people who know, It's on video, it's on plenty of, but it's all on record. This stuff is all on record. There was a deal on the table before Putin even entered the country. There were threats going on across the border from Ukraine. There were financial issues going on, financial contracts being broken with Ukraine, between Ukraine and Russia. There was threats of Ukraine becoming a NATO state. Putin was threatened. They say it was unprovoked. It was absolutely provoked, if you want to look at it in terms of from Putin's perspective on this. Now, I don't think invading Ukraine was the right answer. I think what he did was wrong. It was absolutely wrong what he did. He started the war. However, the negotiations that were on the table that they had basically agreed upon were nixed mostly because of pressure and because of the negotiations that were going on with the Biden administration. Now, Joe Biden had no idea what was going on. I'm not blaming Joe. I'm just blaming the people around Joe, his puppet masters. They were the ones who knew exactly what was going on, and they were the ones who pushed back, saw this as an opportunity to go up against Russia. Now, Russia has lost more soldiers than everybody that died in World War II, I believe. It's just ridiculous how many people have died in this war. And of course, the way the U.S. war hawks look at this, the warmongers look at this, is they look at it as well. We've done all this damage to his military now. We've set him back 20 years or whatever it is they said to me. Well, that's just great. There needs to be negotiations and there needs to be talks. And for, was it 3.5 years? Biden did no discussions with Putin whatsoever. I think it was mostly because they were hiding Biden from Putin because they didn't want him to realize how incompetent he was. Can you imagine a face-to-face meeting with Biden and can you imagine him trying to negotiate anything, just one-on-one? The media freaked out when Donald Trump had a one-on-one meeting with Putin in a room. Oh, who knows what he's talking to him about in there? Oh, they're not letting the press in. Yeah, it's called classified information, folks. And it's we don't have to know about every little thing that these leaders are saying to each other. But we'll see the results of it afterwards. And they're saying, oh, see, he's Putin's puppet. He's going to stop the war. He's going to give Putin all this. You just want the war to keep going because your children aren't dying, the ones dying in this war. Maybe you can come up with a better, you know, outcome here. I hear nothing but just keep fighting. Just keep throwing your kids out there. Now you're old men. Just keep throwing them out there in front of the cannons. Maybe they don't use cannons anymore. We'll consider them, you know, artillery, drones, whatever it is that they're using right now. So it's just one thing after another with these people. And it's all because you realize what they're doing here. When they give this money to Ukraine, what they're actually doing is they're providing the money to the military manufacturers. So the money actually goes to businesses here in the United States. So they're purchasing weapons for them. But if you listen to them, if you actually kind of try to pin them down on this, that they'll say, well, the money never leaves the states. It only leaves us, our country, when it's in the form of military stuff. Now, keep in mind, it's estimated that almost half, 50% of the artillery and some of the things that are going, and this is why we recently had a cargo plane from Ukraine. A Ukrainian cargo plane went down. And for some reason, there was a lot of artillery on it. And guess what? It wasn't going to Ukraine. It was going from Ukraine somewhere else. They're selling. A lot of the artillery that's being sent to Ukraine is being sold on the black market around the world. It's estimated that 50% of it is being sold on the black market to other countries around the world. It's been estimated that a huge number of it is going to the cartels along our Mexican border. Just let that soak in for a moment. $100 billion that we know of. And probably about $10 billion of that, which would pay for the wall, is being funneled back. You know, they're selling basically to the cartels to be used against us on our southern border. How ironic. Now, I guarantee you the people who are in the intelligence business, guarantee you they know this stuff. It's going to be interesting to see what ends up coming out with the new head of the DNI, the head of the FBI, the head of the CIA, all the other organizations out there that are going to be three-letter alphabet organizations that are going to be being gutted recently. Hegseth, what he finds out. Tulsi Gabbard. And of course, with the FBI, of course, that's just the start of this. That's just the tip of the iceberg. So they have to really sweep the deep state off their feet here very quickly, which I think has happened. I think they've been surprising them at every run on this whole thing. I think that otherwise they would have been retaliating. I've been concerned. I think that we as a people need to pray for our leaders on both sides of the aisle here. First of all, that the truth would be revealed. There would be transparency. I think it's the biggest thing is transparency here. I think it was Lincoln. I'm not sure if he was the first one who said it, but he did say that let the people know the truth and the nation will be saved. It's transparency is what we need. I think just like the gold in Fort Knox, is it really gold? Now, they can't just go down there and have a camera showing, oh yeah, here's a bunch of gold bars. Well, that's just a movie set. We have to actually have a real audit of the gold bars. They have to be tested. Make sure that they're actually gold, not just gold-plated. What is it? Tungsten or whatever it is. I guess that was a thing at one point. They were using tungsten. It was plated with gold, being sold to China. Somebody was doing that because tungsten's about the same weight. And I guess they were this shipment of these. I'm sure those bricks are still out there. These gold bars that are phony gold bars, probably still out there. Probably some of them are in Fort Knox. Who knows? There's a whole lot of shady things going on all over the place, and there needs to be accountability. So we'll see. We shall see what we shall see. But I think the American people need to be allowed to see what's going on. There needs to be transparency. If we have a problem, we just need to deal with it. I think the American people will deal with whatever problem they are shown. It's just we might be aghast initially, but yes, we're going to deal with it. We can just deal with it and move on. But we just need to know the truth. I think that's what, in my opinion, this administration is attempting to do. See how it works out for all of us. But in the meantime, it's only Tuesday. Wow. But the month's over. Yeah, pretty close. 3 more days. We'll see how it all goes. Folks, thank you again for listening. Thank you for all the listens. Listenership is up again, which is good. And I want to thank my wife for making this show possible. This show is brought to you by my wife. There you go. See if she listens to the whole thing. See if she hears the very ending. That's why I mentioned at the end. So that, there you go. We have she doesn't say anything about that. I know she'd only made it through halfway before she started feeling sick to her stomach. Folks, thanks for listening. Thanks for praying for our nation. Thanks for praying for all those around you and your family. Just keep the nation bathed in prayer. People, just everybody that you know. And in the meantime, we will trudge on to victory. God bless everybody. Have a great day.